You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Hour two on this Tuesday, Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Come in, stay a while. Spent a majority of the first hour fawning all over Steph Curry, and rightfully so. Dropped 49 last night as the Warriors beat the 76ers. Five three-pointers, eight three-pointers, 10 three-pointers, 11 three-pointers, 4 three-pointers, 11 three-pointers, 10 three-pointers. That's what Steph Curry has done in his last nine games and put up 49 last night. I think we settled on a poll question. Of course, it's not an obvious poll question. McLovin, would you give us the question and the results so far?
What's a basic sports fact that you know least about? How many innings are in a baseball game? How many NFL games are there next year? How many teams make the NBA playoffs? And what is a Super League? And what is a Super League is winning?
The Super League continues to have reverberations over the soccer world and really beyond. Because if you miss the story, 12 of the world's top teams agreed to form their own group. It's thrown the European Union into disarray, as if the EU hasn't been thrown into disarray before. People have wondered if the same model could apply to other sports. And it's a reminder of how fragile the leagues are that we take for granted. There was a time in American sports when it wasn't so obvious. The NFL had to hold off the AFL. The NBA had to hold off the ABA. Baseball's never faced pressure from an outside league, but they have major friction between bigger and smaller markets. And the most obvious translation of the Super League to American sports would be college football, because you could easily see the top teams breaking off. And it might seem far-fetched right now, but I'm not so sure that a lot of soccer fans saw the Super League coming. Change is uncomfortable, feels like it's inevitable, especially when it's out of our control. An interesting time in soccer, and we'll see if it impacts other sports in the future. And you start to think about college football, and I've said before, why don't you just form your own league? Because the NCAA is not governing college football. You know, it's the Power Five conferences that are doing that. But if you take the top part of these conferences and form your own super conference in college football, it can happen. And the money is there. You don't share the money with other schools in the SEC or the ACC. But to get to that point where you say, we're going to take 20 of the best teams, how do you decide on 20 of the best teams? Because if I look at best teams, track record the last 10 years, or do I look at revenue? Because that's different. If I look at revenue, you're going to have Texas and Texas A&M. Revenue. Michigan's going to be in there. There's going to be teams, schools that you go, well, they're not one of the top 20 teams. But if you have revenue, and that's what you're trying to generate, then you're going to have schools that you probably thought would be on the outside looking in, actually being in a little higher than you think. Yeah, McLovin.
Well, you need Michigan in there for to pad Ohio State's schedule.
Wow.
No, but I hate to do this, but can you do a little list of, I've already written three teams. You just said Texas, Texas A&M, Michigan. Off the top of your head, who are some of the other obvious ones?
Well, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama. There'll be some outliers there. If you just look at revenue-producing football programs, I think you're going to be surprised at probably five schools that you would never think would be in the top 20. But if you Google that, like Oregon is close to that. USC, Notre Dame, they would be in there as well. Certainly Notre Dame. But that's what you're looking at. Now, how do you go from we're on the outside, how do we get inside with these super teams, the super conferences, the top 20 in college football? Yeah, Paulie.
I had the top 15 in revenue 2020 for college football. Texas, Georgia, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State. Penn State is sixth.
Yeah.
Then you go Auburn, Oklahoma, Alabama, Nebraska, LSU. You know, LSU's not till the 11th spot.
Yeah.
Then you got Tennessee, which doesn't do a lot on the field, but still makes a lot of dough.
And that's the tricky part, because these aren't the best programs. Now, there are great teams in there, but Tennessee, you would never put them in there. But if you're producing revenue, like Florida State would probably be in there, close to being in there. Okay. USC has not been great in the last decade, but it's still a brand. Michigan has not been great, but it's a brand. And I think that's the tricky part with all of this. Do I think it could happen? I do. The question is, how am I differentiating between those who are going to be in the top 20 because they produce the most money and who has earned their way into the top 20 because they're actually a great football program? Yeah, McLevin.
But college football doesn't really have Cinderellas who win the title. So you don't really need more than the top 20 to determine.
Yeah, but I don't want Tennessee in there because they produce, more money than other programs.
Right, but you could take a team that has had good years. They're not going to win the title, like I don't know, Ole Miss, for example, or somebody. They're not real title contenders if you're looking at it from a competitive standpoint.
Well, you had Leicester City, which is one of the biggest upsets in the history of sports as far as the ability to be able to play and win a championship. But they qualified to give them a chance with UEFA. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, it's a great example. Leicester comes out of nowhere, but in this new model, by winning the Premier League, they wouldn't be automatically vaulted into this Super League.
Yeah.
There's no relegation. I guess you could compare it to the NBA. What if there was a World Basketball League that was where all the money was, and China and Europe and everything that was in place, and they decided to take two teams from America, and it was the Lakers, and because of money, they took the Knicks or the Nets, who are the Nets have no history, but they're good now. The Knicks have financial history. And those teams would now be playing on this world stage. When they come back home to play a Wednesday night game against Phoenix, they would rest their stars. And that's the fear in the Premier League, is that when Manchester United goes to play Real Madrid on a Wednesday, then on Saturday when they play a league game at home, they're going to rest their stars because the money league is the Wednesday league.
Also, here's another topic to keep an eye on. The number of American owners who are involved in or could be involved in the Super League. You're going to get pressure from owners who live in Europe or live in Italy or live in Spain. The American owners aren't going to face that kind of pressure. If, the Glazers, John Henry with Liverpool, they're not there. And I wonder about that the American owners, how sympathetic are they to the soccer fans? And the loyalty is what you want. If you're a soccer fan, you're like, where's the loyalty here? Yeah, Seton.
And it's interesting because if you look at a list of the most valuable soccer teams in the world, guess which the top 15 are?
From the Premier League.
Super League. No.
Oh.
No, it's not from the Premier League only. It's Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, who are expected to join it.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea, Arsenal, PSG, who's expected to join it. Tottenham, Juve, Borussia Dortmund, who's expected. Atletico Madrid, Inter Milan, and then Everton is the 15. I mean, that's basically every team minus AC Milan.
So this is just money. That's all this is. Yeah, McLevin.
I think Stan Kroenke is one of those. The guy who screwed over St. Louis, he doesn't care about fans in America, let alone fans in Europe.
We'll talk to Rebecca Lowe on loan from NBC Sports. She, of course, the host of the Premier League on NBC Sports. She'll join us coming up. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DP Show. By the way, on Peacock, it's a three-part Peacock original series, Michael Phelps, Medals, Memories, and More, streaming now. PeacockTV.com. Start streaming the entire series for free. Alex Smith announced his retirement at the age of 36, and it's not a surprise. And, I always thought that he could have rejoined Urban Meyer on the Jacksonville team and been a backup and been sort of a mentor to Trevor Lawrence. I guess that he did consider that. If he was going to play football again this year, he was going to join Jacksonville and do exactly that. But I think he probably looked around and said, I made it through 14 years. I made it through these surgeries. I was with the Niners, the Chiefs, Washington. He made 6 starts last season, had one of the worst leg injuries in the history of the sport, and that's saying a whole lot, had a bad infection, so bad it required 17 follow-up surgeries. And everybody assumed his playing days were over then, but he worked his way back, was able to play, but ultimately decided that the risk wasn't worth it. At age 36, he has young children. It's easy to understand considering where he came from with this injury. There was a point where Smith thought he might lose his leg. We tend to judge players on pretty narrow parameters for Smith. His play and his comeback are intertwined and add up to a notable NFL legacy, but retiring at the age of 36. We spent a little time talking about the draft, and it's information, but it's a lot of misinformation. And some of it is guided by teams that they want you to think a certain way. They'll give information to a reporter, whether a reporter knows it or not. You know, I've been used before. But, you know, local reporters, somebody says something, then all of a sudden you start to run with it. You know, Dallas and Stephen Jones, Jerry's son, saying, hey, getting a lot of calls for the 10th pick. Okay. I'm sure the Falcons are getting a lot of calls for the 4th pick, but they haven't announced that. Now, the Bengals at 5, I'm sure they're getting calls for that as well. It feels like if you announce it, either you don't get calls or you would like to get some calls. That's the feeling I have. But this is what's going to happen. You know, for the next 7, 8, 9 days, you're going to get a lot of information, and a lot of it is going to be misinformation. Who wants what, when, how, going up, moving down. And we're going to look back on this draft as we do every draft, and we're going to go, what was that team thinking? The Packers with Jordan Love. What were they thinking? Because they weren't thinking. Not correctly, in my opinion. And, you know, then you had this, well, they motivated Aaron Rodgers. All right, well then, take another quarterback this year. Like, you want to get him motivated again? Take another quarterback. Like, that's silly. Aaron Rodgers has a chip on his shoulder. He's had that since he stepped into the league. It's not like, hey, I won the MVP, I'm engaged, I'm happier than ever, I might host Jeopardy. I'm going to remove the chip on my shoulder. It just doesn't happen that way. Tom Brady is not removing the chip on his shoulder. And you would think after a while, you'd go, come on, Tom, let's stop with that. You know, the chip on the shoulder thing. I mean, let's go. Let's lose it. But the Packers took Jordan Love. And the only way that you solve this riddle is either you trade Jordan Love or you let Aaron Rodgers go after this season. And it feels like, at least what I was told, and this was probably 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, I said it on the show, that a source said they would be shocked if Aaron Rodgers was there next season. And then you had all of this fallout there. And now, you know, what's going on? Why didn't they renegotiate his contract so they could have signed another player? Like, there's a lot of drama going on behind the scenes. Remember Russell Wilson? Oh, he's going to be traded. It's inevitable. No, he's going to the Bears. He's not. Oh, that's right. He's not going anywhere. There are times when you just want to get somebody's attention and you want to shake it up. And that's what happened with Russell Wilson. He just wanted to let his girlfriend know, hey, I can leave you. I'm not happy. I need some attention here. And then all of a sudden, Seattle's like, hey, we're going to bring in some linemen and some skill position players. We're going to keep some of those players. We're going to re-sign them. We want you back, Russ. Well, that went away. Remember how big that was? Well, Aaron Rodgers is there, and it stayed there, and it didn't disappear. I think we covered it over a little bit. I think it was like, you know, let's throw a couple blankets on here. And then you realize you take the blankets back, it's still there. And I think it's going to be there. And I think that that's something to keep an eye on. So we'll stay with that poll question. Is that right, McLevin?
Yeah. You know, there was a big debate. There were several debates we weren't part of last week, which really annoyed me. There was one I just wanted to ask you about. I'm throwing it out of nowhere. But there was a tweet from Jeremy Schapp saying you shouldn't take a quarterback because most of them miss. In the draft, but don't most of every position miss in the draft? When we're talking about, you just mentioned that, like, you're going to look back on teams missing, like, there's just no, what's a safe position to draft anymore? Quarterbacks, it's kind of like it's a crapshoot in the top 10. Yeah. Wide receivers are a crapshoot. Who's not a crapshoot? Everyone is.
Well, I think that if you have a lineman and he doesn't work out at a position, I can hide him a little bit. And I can also create a system where the other lineman might be able to hide his inequities. And Joe Thomas said that, you know, the Cleveland Browns future Hall of Famer. Jeremy Schapp of the Mothership tweeted, to reiterate, 44 quarterbacks have gone first, second, or third overall in the last 50 NFL drafts. Exactly two, Aikman and Peyton have won Super Bowls starting for the teams that drafted them. That makes selecting quarterbacks up high exceptionally risky. Okay. But you can take a risk now, and it doesn't crush you financially. Because it used to be when you took a quarterback first or second, Sam Bradford days, Jamarcus Russell, you know, it was going to bankrupt you for a couple of years. Now it feels like that's a financial benefit. Because the Jets are going to have, they had a perfectly serviceable quarterback in Sam Darnold. And maybe they could build around him. But now you take Zach Wilson out of BYU and you hit the reset button when it comes to his salary. And what you can do with that salary with a rookie quarterback contract. Yeah, McLevin.
But it's funny we talk about the quarterbacks. Every position, like I saw a redraft of 2017, like the Bengals took John Ross at number 9. The fact that he's not a quarterback, they get a pass on it. But if they had taken a quarterback there and he failed, we talk about it for a decade.
Yes. Yeah. There are guys who are bust, but we don't refer to them as bust. It's interesting how we pick and choose and say, oh, what were they thinking? That's a terrible draft pick. I mean, all of these sports are littered with bad draft picks. I mean, right? Like you just go, what are you thinking? And that's what I want to know. That's the meeting I would love to be in. The reality show would be after the draft and you've spent a couple of years with a player and you bring in that scout and you say, what were you thinking? Crazy. Yeah, Paulie.
You look at the Tennessee Titans last year. They took Isaiah Wilson, the offensive tackle out of Georgia. Yeah. He's out of football.
Yeah.
Imagine if a quarterback was out of football in a calendar year.
Yeah.
I mean, even Manziel made it to year two.
Yes.
No offense.
Well, he was a quarterback, and that's why he made it to year two.
Right.
Like, they didn't want to admit that they made a mistake. Yeah, McLovin.
We still talk about Christian Ponder, that draft miss. I think it was the 12th pick by the Vikings. 8 years later, I hear his name all the time in draft coverage.
Yeah, but it wasn't his fault that he got taken up there. He wasn't good enough to be taken up there.
Right, but they're probably, if you look at the last 10 number 12 picks, probably 8 of them were bust. But we only because they're a quarterback. Like,
now I know that. I know. But the sport is predicated on having a great quarterback. Everybody's looking for a quarterback. Everyone. And so when you find it, no matter where you find it, then you tell people, you trumpet that. The Cowboys weren't taking Dak Prescott. They were taking Connor Cook out of Michigan State. And then the Raiders saved the day and came in and took Connor Cook. The Cowboys aren't geniuses. They're like, we want Connor Cook. Oh, he's not there. All right. Well, we'll take Dak Prescott. He's a leader. Yes, he.
I wish there was a way to figure out which quarterbacks were busts and which teams busted their quarterback.
Ooh.
You know, because like there has to be some kind of metric or stat that like, no, Sam Darnold is actually awesome. It's the Jets who suck. They're the bust.
So bust or busted?
Right, bust or were they busted?
Yeah.
Bust or busted?
Yes, Todd.
But David Carr, I guess, would immediately come to mind as one of those.
He got busted. Yes, the Texans busted him. Yes, McLovin.
So won't Sam Darnold and Carolina be a referendum on that? It's a great experiment for who was it, him or the team.
That's it's like Ryan Tannehill with the Dolphins and then going to the Titans.
Yeah.
What?
Tannehill's a weird case, though. Is he really that good? It's so hard to tell. All he does is hand it off to Derrick Henry.
Right. He either has to turn to the left or the right and hand it to the bulldozer.
Well, you got to remember to turn to the left or turn to the right.
It's true.
Yes, Todd.
It's a very valid point.
Thank you.
It's not as easy as you think.
Skip in Texas, then we'll take a break. Hi, Skip. What's on your mind today? Hey, Skip.
Yeah, I just wanted to call about McLovin. Only he could find a way to diminish what Steph Curry is doing. The guy is just unbelievable over the last 2 weeks. You gave the stat about 10-point games. And the next best is 5, and Lillard and Harden have 3. So it's not the defenses. And if McLovin's trying to just make every fan base mad at him, he's doing well. And I think we need to rename him McHayton.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Skip.
McHayton.
You are a buzzkill, though, McLovin.
Oh, I know. I've been on a real roll.
I know. Why are you skewing negative?
I think it's being a Philadelphia fan and all our teams are not winning. I mean, they're winning, but you know they're not going to. I think that's the Philadelphia in me coming out. You admit Philadelphia fans are a cynical group.
Ooh, that's a tough group. But I don't know how you can embrace what Steph Curry is doing.
I love Steph Curry, but I am a system guy, and I have to stick to my system guns at all costs.
What other person in a system is doing what Steph Curry's done?
Dame Lillard? I'm throwing darts here. Trae Young?
Okay, here you go. Steph Curry has more games with 40 points and 10 three-pointers in the last eight days than any other NBA player has in their entire career. Steph Curry has 4 in the last 5 games, 6 this season, 17 overall. Next on the list is James Harden, Damian Lillard, Klay Thompson.
Stat of the day. Stat of the day.
What are you doing?
But is he playing any defense, Dan? I want to know that.
That's what I was waiting for. Yeah, but does he play deep? Remember when he was coming in off Davidson? It's like, oh, can he be a point guard? Does he play any defense? He's going to get beat up. Nobody says that stuff anymore. Last time I looked, Luka Doncic doesn't play any defense either. Larry Bird didn't play any defense. Like, it's silly. When you get that two-way player, hey, that's rare. But nobody says, oh, Steph Curry, he can't play defense. Okay, he can't. But can you play defense on him? Let me take a break. We'll talk Super League, the future of the sport. Rebecca Lowe will join us coming up next, 23 after the hour, Dan Patrick Show. It's amazing. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year automatically. No limit on how much you can earn. How amazing is that? In fact, even more amazing because of all the places where Discover's accepted. Fritzy did the research. 99% of all the places in the United States that take credit cards take Discover.
Let's round it off to 100%. They all take it.
When it comes to Discover, get used to hearing the word yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. That's discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen report. Limitations apply. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. This program brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. They go far beyond from their customization options, cutting-edge tech to their 5-star sales service, financial support crew. Mercedes-Benz Vans, built, equipped, engineered to be ready for anything. Go the extra mile by taking the all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. Seton and Pauly brought up the Super League. They said, who do you want to have on? I said, well, let's get messy. And then they said, we can't get messy. I said, what about Ronaldo? And they said, we can't get Ronaldo. I said, well, then get Rebecca Lowe. They said, we'll reach out. Rebecca Lowe, the presenter of NBC Sport Group's Premier League coverage, pre- and post-match, the Premier League Live. They have a match today at 2 Eastern. You have Chelsea and Brighton coming up at 2 Eastern. Good morning, Rebecca. How are you?
Dan Patrick, lovely to see you. I'm very well, and I will come third behind Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo any day of the week.
Now, I would pass on Messi because I don't think he's a great interview. So you're second on the list behind Ronaldo.
Oh, appreciate that. Okay, I'll go above Messi. Yeah, no problem.
Okay, let's say I'm a child and you're going to explain the Super League to me. Okay. How would you do it?
Oh, my goodness, what a question. Okay, I would explain that currently in the Premier League, there are 20 teams, and there always have been since it was formed in the early 90s. 6 of those teams who have self-branded themselves the Big Six. So we're talking Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham and Chelsea. And yes, they are 6 very big clubs and they tend to do better than any other club in the Premier League. Those Big Six have gotten together rather secretly, it has to be said, with some other very big clubs across Europe. We're talking AC Milan, Juventus in Italy, Inter Milan, Barcelona, Real Madrid in Spain. And there will be, they are saying, they have signed a contract to create their own midweek European Super League, ESL is what they're calling themselves, which will take place. They want it to start as soon as possible in August, and it will take place midweek throughout the season, but it will let those clubs still play in their domestic leagues in the UK or in France or in Italy or in Spain. The problem with the situation is that this is a ring-fenced league. This is, for want of a better word, an Americanized league. So once you're in, you're in. You're never going to get out. No matter if you become rubbish overnight, you're in, you're in. You can only go into it on the proviso that you have an amazing one season in your league, but then you might have to lose it again. You might have to go out again. The ones that found and actually have created this league can never fall out of it, which means they will get very, very rich. JP Morgan is backing this league as things stand. They are due for around over £4 billion to share between them. So when they get that rich and they go back to their domestic league, the gap between the likes of United and City and Chelsea and Liverpool, and then the likes of Burnley, Crystal Palace and Southampton will be bigger than ever before, which will mean ultimately competition disappears out of the Premier League. And as Pep Guardiola, the Manchester City manager, said this morning, it is not sport if it doesn't matter if you lose. And if these teams lose in this European Super League, it doesn't matter. There's no relegation. They stay forever. So there is a lot of controversy around this. But that is it in a nutshell, a breakaway controversial league.
When did this start? When did they start forming this?
Well, Dan, I've got to tell you, I remember being a child in the UK. I mean, you know, not that long ago, but back in the late 80s, and people were talking about a Super League, a European Super League. I mean, there was even talked about it in 1964 in some of the newspapers in England. So this has been rumbling for decades. But really, we don't know the full disclosure of how this all took place, because it's happened so quickly. It was announced on Sunday night, out of the blue, very late English time, about 11 p.m. in England. It shocked everybody how quickly it's come out. So this has obviously been in the works for quite some time.
How do you how is this prevented? How do they combat this?
Well, at the moment, the backlash, if anyone listening and watching this has been on Twitter recently, I'm sure they've seen it. James Corden even talked about it last night on his Late Late Show. The backlash is overwhelming. It's the biggest story I've ever worked on in nearly 20 years of being in this industry. It's the biggest backlash I've ever seen. So how does it get combated? Well, rumours today that Chelsea and Manchester City are wobbling. Some of the top football journalists in the UK are saying those two clubs did not realise the backlash would be so big. They're wobbling. So one or two of the clubs pulls out, it will probably crumble. Money, obviously, is a huge thing. JP Morgan, are they okay with this bad PR? If they stay on board, that's good for the Super League. If they decide, actually, don't really want our name associated with something which is getting so much criticism, that's a problem. And then you've got the fans. And down the fans, I've heard fans over the last 24 hours on shows like yours, but in England, saying, I've been a Manchester United supporter for 40 years. Here's my season ticket. I'm done with my club. And I'm not talking one fan. I'm talking thousands. And only this morning, the grandson of Bill Shankly, the great Liverpool manager, the man that really is in every single sinew of that club, the grandson of Bill Shankly has told Liverpool Football Club, remove the statue of my grandfather from outside Anfield. So this groundswell, plus the players have come out and said they don't want it, a lot of them have, and managers like Guardiola, it's a huge pushback. So I suppose somebody has to crumble at some point under this pressure or withstand it. And it's up to these big clubs whether or not these owners really want to go forward with this.
I was also wondering about the role that the American owners are going to play in this, because they don't live there. And, you know, you're going to have Man United, Liverpool, and the impact that they could have removed from this. The role that loyalty is going to play in all of this is what?
The culture is very, very different, Dan. You and I have talked about this many times when we've talked about relegation and the difference between America and the UK. And I think that's something that really has to be understood about English football. We're talking about institutions like United, like Liverpool, John Henry, the Glazer family, Stan Kroenke, Arsenal. These clubs were established over 120 years ago and by local people for local towns and for cities to keep the community close and to do great things like we've seen throughout the pandemic in the community. And I think over in this country, here in the United States, they're perhaps quite isn't that link between huge clubs and their local communities. They haven't been around as long. They weren't created by local men, local working class men, for working class fans. So the loyalty that seeps through English football is incomparable really to anything over here. So when you look at it from the owner's point of view, from the American owner's point of view, I can see that it's difficult to understand. They don't understand why anybody would have a relegation. Why would anybody threaten a club's future? But that's all part of what makes English football so beautiful, because it's competitive, it's sporting merit, it's how good are you on the day and how good can you be? Can you really pull off this amazing result against a huge team? And we see it all the time. And that's what makes the Premier League, in my view and many others, the greatest league in the world in any sport. So I think loyalty, they may be coming up against a bit of a surprise with this backlash, because the loyalty is a huge part of this game. And I think also we have to look at ourselves as well, Dan, because 15 years ago, these clubs were owned by fans and by local businessmen. Well, they sold out. They did sell out to American owners, to Russian owners like Roman Abramovich at Chelsea. And now, 10, 15 years on, we're seeing that maybe that was the reason why these business owners wanted to buy these clubs and maybe turn them into these European superpowers. So, you know, a lot of things have gone wrong over the years, and a lot of people are now looking at themselves. So I think loyalty in football, people laugh. There isn't always a lot of it, but my goodness, between fan and club, Dan, it's tribal and it's a religion.
I haven't heard you this passionate about, I know you love your sport, but you're worried about your sport.
I'm concerned very much so. I feel that the pyramid of English football in the UK, again, something that I wouldn't expect anyone in the States to understand, but it's not just the Premier League, Dan. I think I've told you this before. There are five divisions underneath that, and they're all professional. And these are professional players. Now, the money from the Premier League trickles down to all of these clubs that make up the local towns and villages in the UK. And the worry, Dan, is this, that if the six teams from the Premier League go into the European Super League and become so rich, the dream is over in the Premier League, because the Premier League becomes totally non-competitive, because these six will have so much money that nobody could ever compete. And then they'll have 14 clubs in the Premier League trying to get into a Champions League, which won't have any champions in it, which means you can finish eighth in the Premier League and get into the Champions League, because these other six don't want any part of the Champions League. And all of a sudden, the Premier League becomes non-competitive. The broadcast rights would be nowhere near the value they are now. And the money and the dream doesn't trickle down to all these clubs below, which is the very essence of English football. So my concern is that hasn't been thought through. And we are yet, of course, to see the full plan, because we still haven't seen exactly what these owners want. Let's get the full plan and carry on this conversation. But it's a passionate time. We do need to be cool heads and calm heads. There are rumors today that it might crumble. So let's see where it goes. But yeah, I am concerned for the future of my sport, for sure.
How can I help?
You need to spread the word, Dan. I need to come on here every single day.
Every day.
We need to have these conversations.
Every day.
Dan Patrick, your 5 minutes or 5 seconds of soccer or whatever it is you do, 20 seconds of soccer. Yeah, we need to up that. And I know I've got people watching today who agree with me. We need more conversations with Dan Patrick.
Now, you know, I've been watching some documentaries. I watched the one on Leeds. I watched Sunderland Till I Die.
Right.
Just letting you know, I support the cause and I like the relegated, you know, programs, the teams.
Right? Here's my question to you, Dan. I know it wouldn't work over in the US, relegation, because you're far too down the line, certainly in the NFL, and there's no real league underneath it. But the relegation promotion, I mean, that does it not? It adds so much, doesn't it? You can understand.
Yes. Well, you could do this in college football. Let's say you took the top 20 programs, and then you could get, you know, two drop each year, and then two college football programs go up. Then that would resonate with people, and they'd be like, whoa, wait a minute, that's costly. And that's what it is. It's devastating when you drop financially, when you are relegated. Devastating.
Of course it is. People are laid off. It's terrible. And this is what makes the drama of football so engaging and addictive. And of course, in the States, things are different and it's done in a different way. And I wouldn't expect them to just bring in relegation, but my goodness, it would make it better. But I wouldn't expect that. But over in Europe, it's something that can't change. It's been there for hundreds of years. And I think what people are scared of is that what makes the game so beautiful looks like at the moment is going to be removed, Dan.
And it doesn't help your team, Crystal Palace. They still aren't any good. So none of this helps you, right?
You never know. I mean, if the top six finish in the top six places and Crystal Palace were to finish seventh, I mean, basically we're champions. So I'm going to go all in for this. I'm okay with that.
It's great to talk to you. Keep your head up. Got a lot of time, you know, for cooler heads, smarter people to. I know you follow the money, and unfortunately, when you follow the money, it's going to lead to this, but hopefully it doesn't. Thanks for joining us, as always.
Dan, I'll be back tomorrow, of course.
Of course. Okay. Yes. Todd, make sure you book Rebecca for tomorrow.
Confirmed.
All right. Thank you. That's Rebecca Lowe. There is a Premier League match later on today. It is Chelsea versus Brighton. And the Super League team would be a 20-team league made up of 15 permanent members. The remaining five compromise from teams that qualify throughout domestic European League competition. Yes, Paulie?
You've been to Brighton, England?
Yes, I have.
Really? That's like a coastal town, right?
Yes, it is. I took the train out of London, and we went to Brighton, and I wanted to go play pinball because Pete Townsend and the Who's sang about Pinball Wizard and sure plays a mean pinball. I didn't find a pinball machine in Brighton, but yeah, it's on the coast. It was beautiful. Very, very, very cold. The water. Breezy in Brighton. Yes, Eden.
Somebody just had a funny tweet about, you know, how sort of like in sports, we always look back at different eras and players and were they great and were they not great?
Yeah.
It said, I just realized in 50 years, kids are going to say Ronaldo and Messi played against farmers and didn't do it in the Super League. Like, yeah, their era. Yeah, but who were they playing against?
Yeah.
They didn't do it in Super League. They did it against, you know, all those other teams.
We'll take a break back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, and you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm being accused of jumping on the Steph Curry bandwagon. I've been driving the bandwagon. Tell me who picked Steph Curry to be MVP this year, aside from me. He's not going to win it. I'll always be a Steph Curry fan. Always. Most impactful basketball player in the last 30 years. When you think about somebody who had an impact on how you play, because there are certain things that the great players, you can't be 7 feet, you're not going to jump like Jordan, but Steph Curry made it inclusive that everybody feels like, or at least, you know, you start out thinking, hey, I could do that. So he won an MVP. He created the concept of taking 12, 13, 14 threes in a game. He won an MVP off that concept. He was the first to do that. Get some phone calls in here. By the way, we were looking at the new Bengal uniforms, and why were we looking at the Bengal uniform?
Well, the Bengals did their big announcement yesterday that they changed their uniforms, and they're generally, you know, the black, the orange, the white is still there, but they're more scaled down. They're less busy from the neck down. Mm. Now, a lot of people were asking why didn't...
So were the Bengals. They're less busy from the neck down.
A lot of people were asking why didn't they change a helmet. The helmet is exactly the same.
Okay.
And according to Mike Brown, the owner and team president, it was my father's belief that the helmet should be distinctive. You should be able to walk in the stadium, look down onto the field, and identify what team that is. Our helmet does that. He has no plans to change a helmet.
Now, if you look at what the Bengals' original helmet was, you didn't walk into the stadium and say, boy, the Bengals are here. Unless you went, boy, who's got the really bad helmet? Oh, the Bengals do.
It actually had their team name on the side.
Yes,
of the helmet.
Just to help you understand who it was. The Bengals had terrible helmets. It was sort of orange, brownish, and then it just said Bengals on the side. I mean, I guess if you want to bring it back, you know, everything is retro, but, you know, I think the kids like what the Bengals wear. Yeah, McLovin.
You know, I think you can judge a team by who they bring out to show off the new uniforms, and that was not an A-list for the Bengals. Okay, I'm a little worried about our guy, Joe Burrow.
But who is the A-list for the Bengals? If you're going to go, hey, they got their great players together, and you go, there's Joe Burrow.
Well, they had...
That's all I know.
They had it. Number 30, it turned out, was Jesse Bates. The 84 that we couldn't figure out is a backup tight end named Mitch Wilcox or something.
Ah, oh, Wilcox.
I've never heard of him. Unless I was misreading this. It's not a good list. They do have T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, but you got to admit, it looks like an uphill battle for Joe Burrow to really be great here.
Wow, that's really going against the grain, McLovin.
Well, he was the number one overall pick. And
there's a reason why he was the number one overall pick, because they had the number one overall pick. They aren't any good.
But you know that five-year window? Like, this team does not feel like they're going to threaten in Joe Burrow's five-year window.
They might not. Yes, Seton. You're
kind of dabbling into bust or busted with this segment.
Yeah, Joe Burrow could get busted by the Bengals.
He's a great candidate for Seton's bust or busted.
Yes, he is. Yes, Paul.
Then why don't quarterbacks pull Eli Mannings more often? Why, we discussed this last year based off nothing about Joe Burrow not wanting to play for the Bengals, and you know he definitely didn't take the bait or anything. But if you're Wilson from BYU, do you want to be a Jet? What would make you want to be a Jet? You know, for the sake of your career.
Well, you get to go in to New York, and if you win as a Jet. Like Joe Namath went to the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's a long time ago, but that's the last time they had a quality quarterback, it feels like. Yes, McLovin.
I mean, bad teams need quarterbacks. You're going to have to go to a bad team. There's no way you're going to go to a good team. Eli was an anomaly.
If I said to Sam Darnold, and I gave him a do-over as he's coming out of USC, you can refuse to go to the Jets. What do you think Sam Darnold would say, knowing what he knows now? He might say, well, privately, I would say this. Publicly, I would probably toe the line. Like John Elway said, I'm not going to play for Baltimore. I mean, he took heat, but it was the right move. Mark in Michigan. Hey, Mark.
Morning, Dan. How are you?
Good, Mark.
Good. Well, I just wanted to say we were pleased to have you in Brighton. That's where I grew up. I grew up less than a mile from the stadium back when Brighton and Hove Albion were back at the Goldstein ground. And I would just echo what Rebecca said earlier. We were almost kicked out of the league about 25 years ago, just about survived by the skin of our teeth. And now here we are back up in the Premiership again. And, you know, that would be lost if the Super League comes to formation.
Yeah, I know.
Where are the underdogs going to come from?
Thank you, Mark. And it was nice to be in Brighton. I didn't go watch a soccer match. But imagine if you had college football where you had the top 20 schools and you were going to relegate two every year. Two go up, two come down. How much fun would that be in those last days, college football? That would be really interesting. But that's what you have in the Premier League, relegation. And it's devastating to these smaller towns. The importance of that soccer team. 2 hours in the books. One more to go. Seton Pauley, Fritzy McLovin, yours truly. More of your phone calls coming up. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. One more item in the second hour, and it's M-Drive, the daily supplement that I take every day. Hence the name, Daily Supplement. M-Drive, it's packed with powerful ingredients. It's backed by science. Keeps you energized, stronger, leaner. You can hear the energy in my voice. And guys my age don't have this energy. They can't keep up with me. How do you feel every morning? You feel sluggish? Did you get a good night's sleep? You ready to, you know, seize the day? You ready to work out, eat right? All of those things. Start right. Start with M-Drive. Free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. You can get M-Drive at Walgreens, Rite Aid, and Vitamin Shoppe. Or go to mdrivedan.com, and you'll find that they have a lot of great things for you. Energy, strength, drive, it works for me. It can work for you. Go to mdrivedan.com. Don't let age beat you. And if you don't pick it up at mdrivedan.com, go to Walgreens, Rite Aid, or Vitamin Shoppe. Refind your prime with M-Drive, mdrivedan.com.